Magic.
And the world of illusion.
Magic TV.
And Craig Petty. Proudly present the Talk Magic Podcast. Every week we bring you awesome interviews with the greatest magicians that have ever lived. And now, here's your host, Craig Petty.
TV, my name's Craig. It is 9 o'clock, which means it's time for a Talk Magic, and this is super exciting. I have been following this gentleman's career for a long time. He's a multi-award-winning magician. He has created and innovated some of the most spectacular illusions and tricks that I've ever seen. He was at the top of his game as a magician, switched industries, and carried on dominating that industry. He's now merging everything together. He's an entrepreneur, a magician, a scientist, and an all-round really nice guy. I am, of course, talking about the one and only Jason Latimer. How you doing, Jason?
Doing great. Thank you so much. You're fantastic. That's, after an opening like that, I'm like, I can't wait to meet the guy.
Man, a lot of performers and a lot of people during the pandemic, they just chilled out and just like, right, okay, there's nothing I can do. I'm just going to watch some Netflix and just relax. While you've just been the most busiest guy on the planet, and what you've achieved over the last few years, in fact over your entire career, I don't use this term lightly. It is super inspirational.
Thank you. I looked at the pandemic, or at least the lockdown side of the pandemic, as an opportunity to not be on tour, to not be traveling so much, and really take on the aspect of my career that I actually didn't really focus on. That most of my stuff is always live events, festivals and stage shows and museums, and taking up the museum space. But the pandemic forced me to think bigger, and then the question was, do I focus on individual ticketed shows, or do I build pieces that I could use for the rest of my career? And so that was the idea. That was the transition, was like, let's take everything that I do during this lockdown and make sure that it's another tool in my toolbox for the next part of my career and goal. Thank you. It was a lot of work. I had a tremendous amount of support, and it was like bailing out the ocean as far as the education space, as far as creating content for teachers and school districts to use, because it's not like a test where you can get a C or B. My science consultants, which are my old professors from college, I actually went back and hired them to review everything. They said it best. They said, you have to get an A on every single test, because these are getting played in schools. And so it's not like you can wing it. I was talking to a group of them the other day. I was like, man, I'm pretty exhausted. And they said, well, you've learned over 100 subjects in a year, and you've gotten an A on all of them. So we found it was easier to learn the subject and be able to free verse and talk about the subject than try to read a script and have it be boring. So it was kind of like going to school to be able to present this on a video that would be played in schools.
Wow.
Yeah, so it was a lot of fun and a lot of work, but I'm having a blast, and I'm going to just keep going.
There's going to be a lot of people that are watching this interview that don't really know what you're doing with Impossible Science, and I want to unpick everything because it's awesome. But before we do, I want to just get there. I want to talk a little bit more about your history, you as a magician before you transitioned. And then I want to talk about what you're doing right now and merging them all together. So,
old school. I don't know. You've been following for quite some time. So, here we go.
Well, here's the question. The first question I want to ask you is, let's talk about your origin story as a performer, because we know you as in your earlier in your career as a multi-award winning illusionist. You know, there's lots of I see the clear cups and balls on the shelf behind you.
I hide a couple of them. In fact, there was a laser up there too, but I had a show last week. These are actually the props from the show. I just take it down and move it over.
That's so cool. But we know you for all of that. But when did you get started in magic, Jason? When did that actually
I started magic, much like most magicians, at a very early age. I was 9 years old on a cruise ship. I saw Dan Birch perform, and it occurred to me, because it was a week-long cruise, about a day or so after the cruise, after I saw his performance, that I bet you he's still on the ship. I realized we haven't ported anywhere, so I bet you that guy's still stuck on this ship. And I tracked him down. I literally hunted him down, and I forced him to teach me a magic trick. It was out of this world. It was fantastic. I was hooked ever since. I've stayed in contact with him ever since. Every time I see him, I remind him, I'm like, I was a 9-year-old that hunted you down on a cruise ship and bombarded you with questions. And then my father kept it going. He basically said, all right, well, he really likes magic. Let's keep nurturing this. And then by, 12 to teens, I really started taking it seriously, and then became involved with the junior program at the Magic Castle, and that's really where that came from. But it was really, I talk about this in my show a lot, which is, it was really about this wondering what is possible that really changed my understanding of magic and science, which was basically, I was very confident I had no idea what the hell was possible. any kid that's ever made cardboard wings and jumped out of a tree and wondered up and looked at the tree and said, why didn't that work? It means that one, they were thinking that this would work. They thought this was possible. And then when you see the person fly on stage, you go, wait a second, everyone's been lying to me. Like, what are the rules of what can and can't happen? And that led to this passion of like, what are the secrets behind magic? And then you find yourself asking the exact same question in science. What defines what can and can't happen? Mm-hmm. And that's really how my science and magic passion started. And then I started applying what I knew in science towards magic. So when I went to FISM with the clear cups, I was using applied science to really take down a magic trick. And when it won, I won the Grand Prix, I was like, this is a good idea. I'm going to keep doing this. this is a really good idea. I'm gonna take applied science, and I'm just going to keep leaning into the magic community and see how far we can go. And that's how shaping water and bending light and forming smoke and the live bullet time illusion. The funny one that people didn't put together until years later was, if you take a step back, and you don't look at the tricks as the rotating levitation or the water shaping as an illusion, and you take a step back and you look at it, you realize that shaping water is chemistry, and the rotating stage is engineering, and the laser was physics, and the cups and balls was applied perceptual psychology. I was literally just going down the departments of the university and just asking them, how do we apply this into something that becomes an illusion? And that also set me up for later on in my career, when you find out that every illusion I've ever worked on is actually a different field of science. And you realize now I've got all these different tools that can be used later on. And so so that the origin story is really just being super curious about how things work. And then it seemed to work. So I was like, okay, let's do that.
I speak to a lot of people who got into magic, like really seriously into magic as a kid and as a teenager, and their goal is to become a professional magician. You obviously went to college and studied science.
Yeah.
Was the goal during college to be a professional magician?
Absolutely.
So the science thing was studied because you enjoy it, and because you enjoyed the concept of kind of taking science and using it in your magic, but you didn't ever want to be a science. You wanted to be a professional performer.
There's a lot of truth to this. There's a great question, because, you know, how many people really grow up to actually be a professional magician? And my family, my father was a structural engineer and general contractor, and my mom was a dancer and choreographer and actress. And looking back, I'm like, I guess they were hoping for a magician. like that. I guess they're hoping for an engineering magician. But the reality is, you know, the other side of my family, as far as my siblings and their husbands and my larger family, it literally goes Dr., 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 Dr. Jason. And so the idea of not going to college wasn't an option. So I had to go to college. And I won the Grand Prix when I was in college. Wow. So I was studying science I enjoyed it. I loved magic. And doing something I loved and combining those passions together led to the world championships. So when I won the world championships, that was the deciding factor of I'm going to go for it. Like if I didn't go for it, I would never forgive myself. So it was like, and it was the best decision I've ever made. Betting on yourself. That's a strong lesson. It's always, I like to bet on myself.
Before we carry on, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask this question. For anybody who's watching that's interested in entering competitions and ultimately maybe one day going to FISM and winning, as one of the few people that have won FISM, is there any advice that you can give on that journey? Because
I always tell people, you know, if you really want to do competitions or even just make a name for yourself in any industry, doesn't have to be magic. I always tell people, be the best of one. You know, you may not be the greatest at shaping water, but if you're the only one in the world shaping water, you're going to be pretty good at it compared to everybody else. So if you come up with something purely original, the judges, the spectators, the viewers will have nothing to compare to. So you can get as great as you can about with somebody else's moves, but you'll always be compared to the person that created it. So if you come up with something completely original, you'll be the best of one. And if you keep doing that, and the more unique you make yourself in your career, the clearer the path becomes for you, and it's harder for everybody to keep up. You know, that's building. You know, and the other thought to that is like build your own sandbox. You know, you can play in other people's sandbox, but they've probably had a head start. And because of that, being original and having your own sandbox prevents people from playing in your sandbox because you've created all of this. But the reality is 2020 hindsight, you don't need a competition to be a magician. You don't need a competition to be a magician. Now, I'm very fortunate. I hit a hot streak when I was in the competition phase. And I think if you include the magicians, it's something like 17 in a row. But that was a TV one judged by like, fans, but when it comes to the magic community, you don't need a magic contest to be a magician. But what a magic contest does do is prep you for really being the best that you're going to be, and you really shouldn't do it until you're ready to compete. You know, Billy McCollum, I worked with him for many years as just a great friend and mentor about what to do, and he was joking around, but pretty adamant about not being in the contest till you're at least 21, because one of the things he told me is that they have to take you seriously after 21. If you come in under, you might win a junior award. That's not going to help you in the real world. But if you come in at 21, you're going to be an adult. You're competing against adults, and you know, that's funny that he said that. But you know, I took it to heart, and so I really didn't enter the magic community until I turned 21, And that's when I started doing World Magic Seminar, and IBM, you know, all the different ones. Actually, I did IBM first and then went on to the other ones. That's my advice, is be the best of one and really try something original. It's not easy, which is why you deserve it if you get it. It's a lot of work. And then the hard part is maintaining that. Winning the Grand Prix was more scary after the competition than going into the competition, because I just didn't want to do anything subpar after that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Absolutely. Absolutely. And obviously, a lot of the stuff that you did in FISM is so iconic. Like even today, now, the clear cups and balls, the laser illusion, shaping water, these are things that are still iconic to you and just as incredible today as they were back when you entered and you created them and you did them for the first time.
Thank you. Yeah, they're really some of my favorites. Everybody always asks me, what's your favorite? I'm like, they're all like my babies, and they're always changing. They're always changing. I think that's Gen 4. You probably can't tell the difference, but that's the fourth generation of cups. But I can see the cups. The problem is every time I order cups, I have to order 1,000 at a time. And I was giving away for Christmas gifts in my college year. That's a funny story in itself. I love telling people. FISM did change my life. It's the greatest move. I was a broke college student. I basically borrowed money and everything I could do to get into the competition to go. And when I won, Harold Hessling, he was a stage manager there, and he goes, what are you going to do? You know, you're Grand Prix. What are you going to do? And I'm like, I don't know. And the funny, let me give you the backstory to this. I was so broke at the time that Danny Sylvester the Jester, he was going to perform at FISM as a performer, not a competitor. And so I arrived early because I didn't know exactly when I'd be competing and I wanted to be rested. So I arrived early and put all my money into like staying in a hostel, just like as cheap as I possibly could do. I'm going to be there and I'm going to be rested for this competition. But once the FISM starts, I'm going to go move into Danny's hotel room and sleep on his floor. That's what I'm going to do for the rest of the competition. Now, this is a long time ago, and I didn't have a cell phone with me or anything like that. And so what I didn't know is Danny loses his passport on the way to the airport. And he has to get a hold of me, which I'm already in the Netherlands, that he's not coming.
Oh, no.
So I was homeless during the entire competition. I was sharing and begging my way into people's rooms and sleeping on cots in different hotel rooms throughout the entire week of FISM. And when I won, I had nowhere to go. And it was so, you don't win a prize cash award. And so the stage manager goes, so what are you going to do? I'm like, I don't know. I don't have a place to stay. And he goes, you're coming with me. So I actually got all my stuff, went home with him and his family, and I slept on his office floor with my trophy. So here I had won the largest competition in the world for magic, and the next night I was sleeping on the floor with my trophy. Of course, then after that went on like a 37 country tour, but the funny part about it was the day after I won, I was just sleeping on the floor.
Crazy.
Yeah, but the other part leading up to it was I had built a generation of cups. The first generation of cups were plastic. They were made in the machine shop at UC Santa Barbara. And we really worked on how to make them. And I finally get them super excited. I show them to my physics professor, and I still work with him today, Dr. Cannell, David Cannell, a brilliant man. And he goes, oh, that you were so close. You could have added X, Y, and Z. And I was like, okay. So then I call up a glass company saying, hey, can you make this out of glass? And they go, yeah, but we don't do 3 cups at a time. We do 1,000 cups at a time. And I go, oh, all right. What do you need? We need a mold. I'm like, okay, save up all my money, make a mold, send it over, get 1,000 cups. Bring that back to David. And David goes, ah, man, had you just made these changes, you could do even more, you know, brainstorm, you know. So I had to go back to, I was working as a restaurant magician during the week. Weekdays, I worked as a security guard for the university at 11 p.m. to 5 a.m. 2 times a week while going to class and riding a bicycle around for the university police department. It's a glorified security guard. And it cost me minimum wage to make these runs. And I wasn't selling them. So I was just, I didn't even have real furniture. I had boxes of cups, box, cloth, lamp. That was like box, wood, table. Oh my God. And for Christmas, I started giving them away. I started filling them with candy, putting them in saran wrap and giving them, they don't know. No one's going to know. It's just one cup. They would never know. And then I won, and then I'm calling everyone back. You don't happen to have that cup, but
oh my god!
And then you know, it took me decades until, or maybe a decade until I just finally started throwing that stuff away about the stuff I don't use anymore. But for the longest time, I hauled thousands and thousands of cups from one move to another.
I suppose you got to do what you got to do, right?
It's a funny little story, but it's a very true story, and it's a very humbling story that you don't need a magic contest to be a magician. And even if you win the greatest magic award in the world, you could still be sleeping on the floor the day after. It's what you do after the award that really matters. Like I could have sat back and just done the cups and balls, but I have to make a transition as fast as possible before the next person comes. So I went immediately into construction for the other racks. Yeah. It's just a random story, right?
Amazing. So when you finished college, you graduated college, you've won FISM, you've gone all around the world, you then become a professional magician, and your career goes from strength to strength to strength. You're literally, everybody wants you. Your act is so original. It's so unique. You've got a huge profile. You're on TV all the time. You're at the top of your game and can literally command any fee, both in and outside of the magic community. So at some point, and I think you said off camera, it was around about Wizard Wars, you decide to move away from the magic community that's given you all of this fame, really, all of this fame, all of this success.
Well,
why?
Well, I would say I wasn't really planning on moving away as much as I was running for so hard for so long that I didn't think anybody was chasing. I had built a pretty large stage show. I mean, fully loaded. I'm still about, even with the stuff I've kept, I'm about 145 foot semi, 145 foot container to do it. I went to the UK, was on the Magicians, brought some of my biggest illusions out there, rotating stage and whatnot. And when I came back, I kind of went back into the casino circuit, and I realized, you know, I don't know if this is really what I want to do for the rest of it. And I was hemming and hawing about things I wanted to do in the science community. And I was given the opportunity to speak on stage at the TEDx Wall Street conference and really get a chance to say, why did I become a magician with the education that I have and the choices I made during that. And on that stage, I talked about this thing called the illusion of knowledge, and I'll cover that later, but it sat with me to the point that I was really, couldn't stop thinking about that problem. And when I was given the opportunity to be on Wizard Wars, I was like, this is it. I can film a bunch of episodes with Wizard Wars, and this gives me the comfort and the freedom to pursue this idea in science with magic. And I originally said, I'm just going to do 8 weeks at the museum, and I will see if I can figure out a way to change education. That 8 weeks ran for a year and a half, six shows a weekend, every weekend. And I was down at the Fleet Science Center in San Diego. And the funny thing is, I don't live in San Diego. I live in Los Angeles, which is about two and a half hours away. Mm-hmm. So every weekend I was driving down there to prove a point, because what I had said on the stage really struck me so much that it hit me so much in my gut that I had to do this. And so even if it was going from a casino super expensive ticket to dropping the ticket super low so that everybody can participate, to see if I could reach more people. It just became so much more rewarding when I walked off stage versus at a casino. And I kind of just fell in love with it, to be honest. I fell in love with it. But then that's when you realize the work's really got it. It got a lot. You spent your entire life pushing one side of your career, that when I found that I could have a footing in the science community, and then I had to make a decision to stop and build up my science background and support in the education space. And then I was on the TV show Psyjinx with Johnny Galecki and Tamara Robertson. And that started getting footing in the science community, allowed me to say, all right, okay, magic's going to be fine. I can still do magic when I need to do it. But now I need to build up my presence in the science community. So it was kind of like a small transition.
And was that a difficult thing to do? Was that difficult? Because you spent years traveling around to the different magic conventions, meeting magicians and hanging out with people that are huge fans of yours and performing magic nightly, and then to go, well, I need to step away from this now. If I'm going to make a success out of being a part of the science community, and I know you well enough to know that if you do something, it's either all or nothing. And I know that you want to go into it and make a success of it. In order to do that, you have to distance yourself from everything that you've known up until that point. Was that a scary thing to do?
It is and it's not. So, like, this is for any future magicians. I'm going to put this out there. If you've ever met somebody that says, you're the magician, right? They don't remember your name, but they'll remember you that you're a magician. It should hint to you that magic has this unusual ability to like really stay in people's minds. Like, it really, out of any, you know, people just remember you're a magician. They may not remember your name, but their magic is like this, I don't know, it just attracts attention to it. And in the magic community, I can do magic and be a scientist, and people could know about that. But in the science community, I could bring magic with me and I could stand out like a sore thumb. Like that, yeah. So that was the real, the advantage to being a magician in the science community is there's not many. There really isn't many. I mean, there's a couple of people that have really made some brilliant papers about why magic and science are correlated. But the idea of really using it in the framework that I was trying to use it, it really hadn't happened before. And so, yes, it was hard to swallow as far as just, this is something I got to do and go for it. But, you know, I never gave up magic. I just wasn't in the magic community. I just used the magic in the education and science space. And so it wasn't that hard of a transition, but it did teach me something for any magicians out there. Taking magic with you into another field is a very quick way to stand out. Very, very quick way to stand out. And 2020 hindsight, if I look back at that, that's a very fast way of building a sandbox. If you take your skill set and add it to a passion, that might be another skill set of yours.
And that's really good advice. And when you went into science, obviously your goal was to become well known within the science community, because you had certain goals that you needed to hit. And in order to hit those goals, you needed to have a certain standing. When you did magic, I'm not going to say it was easy, because it's not, you know, oh, it's easy, you won FISM. But there are competitions that you can enter that increase your social proof exponentially.
Right.
How were you able to replicate that so quickly within the science community? Because there are thousands of, here's you who did a science at college, but then became a professional magician. And now you're going into the science community and going, hey, look at me. Well, who are you? Do you know what I mean? How did you replicate your success there without competitions or without social proof? Or,
well, you know, I it brings me to a topic called the illusion of knowledge.
And this is what you mentioned earlier that gave you that epiphany, right?
Yeah. So this illusion of knowledge takes a magician to spot it. So I'm going to break this down for magicians, because magicians are totally going to understand this. And when you put this out in the regular community, it just blows minds. People are like, what is happening? And so here's the illusion of knowledge. You tend to think you know everything, so you stop asking questions. And that's just the basic idea of what the illusion of knowledge is. So let me show you how bad it is in the age of information. And I'm going to paraphrase it this way, because this is based off of my TED Talk. So if you ever have 12 minutes to waste, go watch my Jason Latimer and TEDx Wall Street. But you can even fast forward to the second half of it. It's really points out this flaw in the format of the age of information. And to put it in briefly, it's never been a good idea in the history of humankind to rank ideas by popularity. It's just never worked out. You know, we've thought we were the center of the universe. We turned out to be wrong. We thought the earth was flat. We turned out to be wrong. And every time we say we absolutely know, new data eventually pops up and we go, oh, okay, well, maybe we weren't 100% sure on that. That's because there's never been a rule book of how the universe works. And all we've done is just guessed. And everything you've ever learned came from a person before you that guessed. And the great thing about science is everybody's proving each other's work. So it's really about a progression of logical questions. That's really what education is. It's just catching up to all the questions that have already been asked because there's no rule book, right? So since we know it's never been a good idea to rank ideas by popularity, we then reached a level where we took all of our answers and we gave it to an algorithm and said, rank this by likes, clicks, shares, and views. And now we've got a problem because we got two things. One, we forgot we gave the internet its answers. The next generation of kids will not remember that we didn't give, they always think it was there. And to put that sentence into a more succinct way of saying it, had the internet been around when we collectively thought the earth was flat, we would never be able to use the internet to find the true shape of earth because everyone's uploading the wrong answer. You get it? So you're uploading the wrong answer. Then you tell the algorithm, rank this by popularity. And so the most popular one goes first. And so a revolutionary idea by definition doesn't start off popular. Only one person knows about it, you know?
Yeah.
And so that would fall to the bottom of a search engine result. And so now we're hoping for a couple of things. We're hoping that our next Einstein has a search engine optimization plan on top of being a genius. And the second part to this is the person searching the question doesn't know the answer, right? Mm-hmm. So they grab from an already popular idea, even if it's wrong or out of date. And even if they had the education to say, you know, this website looks wrong, it's too late. You've clicked on it and you've made it more popular to the next user. It's a progressive illusion. It's like a lockbox that if you touch it, an extra pin is going to fall into a place. And now it's harder to open than if you didn't touch it. So by clicking on the website, you've actually made it more deceptive to the next person.
Yeah.
All right. And so our wrong answers are climbing too. And so if you think of it this way, this illusion of knowledge is becoming extremely deceptive in the age of information. And how do we get our next generation of kids to see beyond popular answers? And that's how I created Impossible Science, was to teach a kid how to think differently about applied science. And you can go into levitation at one of our museum festivals or courses, and you'll learn multiple ways to make something actually fly. It's all levitation, but you're learning thrust, lift, maglev, Bernoulli's principle, Magnus effect, quantum locking, anything, invisibility. How light works, how the eye works, how psychology of the mind works. It's the MMA of science. That's Impossible Science. It's anything goes, but here was the goal. And it teaches kids how to think like a magician, that there might be more than one way to go. We basically turned effect versus method into an education platform. Like, that's really what Impossible Science is. So the whole concept, when you tell an educator or a school superintendent, and a teacher, or even just a homeschooler, you point out about this ranking ideas by popularity, and that's everyone's go-to way to get information on the crystal ball, you find out there's a flaw in the format of the age of information. And once you see it, you can't unsee it, because by clicking on it, you've made it more deceptive. It's a...
Yeah,
it's just a crazy thing. And it takes a magician to spot something that's really sneaky. But when you're sitting there with a whole bunch of science background and illusions in every field of science, and you know there was multiple ways to build those props, you just chose one, and you have the attention of the magic space, but you could probably get the attention of the education space. That's how they all came together. So it's a lot of layers to an onion, but that's how you stand out. There's a real mission behind Impossible Science.
And for people that don't know, Impossible Science is your company.
And
tell us what you're doing with Impossible Science, because it's grown over the last few years.
Impossible Science started off as a stage show at the Fleet Science Center in San Diego. From Impossible Science, then went into Impossible Science, then went into a situation where I was like, I'm driving down every weekend. There's got to be a way to scale this when I'm not here. And so we created Impossible Science Festival. And that was experiments that kids could blow their own minds. You can go into the levitation section and just do tons of experiments with levitation. And I basically took the format of science experiments and then laid them out in a way that would present them like a magic trick and you would blow your own mind doing the experiment. So like X, Y, Z, invisible. Whoa, like you're like, I must have done it right because I turned something invisible. And it's like a goal-oriented education where kids know the answer before. Like if we do X, Y, and Z, it's gonna walk or animate on its own, you know? Like that's pretty cool. So then what happens is I started using that as a template to offer to other museums, either the stage or the festival. And then the San Diego Science Center, the Fleet Science Center said, well, would you like to be a curator of the museum so that we could use this template in Impossible Science even bigger? And that's when I started developing larger scale exhibition pieces and really signed on as the curator of Impossible Science for the Science Center, and then got all the other museums to do the same. And now we have science centers throughout Southern California and even Oregon. And we were only hindered by the pandemic. And we tried our first out-of-state one in February of 2020, and it was a huge success. 60 sold-out performances at OMSI, Oregon Museum of Science and Industry. And then the pandemic lockdown happened. So what's basically, I had this live event, festival and show combination. And I was given the opportunity to partner with Sony. And Sony and I decided to partner with, we decided to take Impossible Science and make it accessible to people online because of all the problems of education when the lockdown occurred. So that's when the real work happened is between Sony's global COVID, Sony has a program called the Sony Global COVID-19 Relief Fund. And it basically allowed us to take every experiment we've ever created for the festival and turn it into a video. Then we use the educators from different museums and had them write lesson plans to the videos. So you could have one video, but you could have a lesson plan for first through third grade or fourth through fifth grade or sixth through eighth grade, all tied to the same video. And then because it was a relief fund, we made it free to any teacher anywhere around the world that would need this help. And so you had videos and you had lesson plans. And then in that whole process of craziness that had gone on, a buddy of mine, Ben Dicko, and I had started, Ben Dicko is the Columbia Memorial Space Center CEO. And him and I started Impossible Science Festival at that very small museum. And we originally made it free so that we could have more people show up. Fast forward 5 years, pre-pandemic, we were seeing 10,000 people a day show up at the festival, which is now called City of STEM. And it's now officially the LA Science Festival. So when the pandemic happened, they reached out to the Science Festival and said, hey, can we help the LAUSD, the Los Angeles Unified School District, with science, basically science content? And I said, by the way, I'm making science content with mine, with Sony. And then we got LAUSD. And then from LAUSD, we got a Department of Education in New York City. And then from Department of Education in New York City and LAUSD, that's the two largest in the country for school districts. We then partnered with PBS because we needed to make sure that kids that didn't have access to the internet could still watch an episode on television. And then the sponsors started helping us out. We partnered with NASA for some episodes. We had a lot of celebrities come on the show. We did chemistry with Bryan Cranston. We did a center of mass and balance with Ralph Macchio and William Zabka. So basically, if you tell me what you, we just did made ghosts appear for Ghostbusters. Basically, you tell me who we get to talk to, and we end up creating magic around it and going to a science experiment about it. And how can you actually do it? And we're up to about 50 million views now across the platform, and probably hundreds and hundreds of thousands of kids involved. I don't know the exact numbers now, but we do short form on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram. We even have video episodes available on YouTube. It's all free, all free. And it's great.
Mind-blowing, really.
The price is right. The price is right.
But it's mind-blowing that you've achieved this. I'm blown away. With all of this that you've got going on, do you still have time to perform a regular magic show, or is that kind of something that you kind of go, look, I just haven't got time?
Well, the pandemic still, you know, over here in Los Angeles, we still have pretty high numbers. And so one of the biggest problems we have with Impossible Science being a live event is how many people we see in a day. So we really haven't, we've actually postponed a few of our museum appearances because of the variants and the safety feature. The museum might be open, but the school district may not be comfortable with sending that many kids. See, originally we were open in, when it was just in San Diego, it was just the weekends, spring breaks, summer breaks, whatever. When we started in Oregon, we started pairing with school districts and local schools to bring the kids during midweek, like a field trip to the museum. That's how we could get so many done in a month. And so, and we also became what's called NGSS, which is Next Generation Science Standards, meaning Impossible Science satisfies what those kids should be learning at that age anyway. So it wasn't just, this is a cool magic trick, this is a cool science experiment, let's put them together. It was, this is a cool, Ralph Macchio does great things with Karate Kid and Center of Mass and Balance. So let's do a lesson on Center of Mass and Balance. Let's create a magic trick about Center of Mass and Balance. And then let's create an experiment that reflects all of these and then put that as an episode for it. So it's a little bit of threading the needle, but that's the real secret of why it's growing. It's what the kids should be learning. It's a more fun way to learn. It's what you and I wanted as a kid in science class. Mm-hmm. And anybody who's ever loved the question, like, how does that work in a magic trick, would love Impossible Science. And I really run with the philosophy that if you don't understand it, it comes off as magic. And so, and that's really what we're doing. I would love to get back into the stage shows, but I think we're going to be producing more content for the immediate future. I have individual shows throughout the year, but for the most part, the museums won't be reopening for me until about 2023. So.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. So you're going to spend the next year kind of just focusing on building the brand, raising awareness, getting more people to know who it is and who you are, pushing more content out there.
I wish I could share everything that I'm up to, but we're building another flagship. I don't know how to explain it other than, everything's off of the same hub. You got a stage show, you got the festivals, you've got the lesson plans, you've got the video series, you got the school program, you got the spring, summer camps. And now I've got a much larger game plan of what I wanted to do, which was the goal from the very beginning. That's what we're working on. Unfortunately, I can't share that one with you, but that's what this year is being dedicated to. Museums don't open events like ours overnight. It takes months and months of planning to coordinate that many field trips all at once, that many kids all at once. So it may sound like a really far away for us, but we're already in the 2023-2024 calendar for what we do. So, but what we do have coming is pretty special. It's pretty epic. I'm very, very excited. I wish I could share it. I hate the fact that I'm teasing about it, but it's very hard to hide because I'm so passionate about it to know that it's coming.
I was just going to say, the word that sums you up with everything you've talked about, whether it be magic, whether it be science, every aspect of you, the passion just comes flowing through the screen from you. It really does.
Oh, thank you.
About everything that you do. I mean, that's such an important thing to have, regardless of industry.
Yeah, I'm very lucky to find something I was passionate about from a very early age. Like, everyone loves magic. But the mission behind Impossible Science and the impact it's having in the hundreds of thousands of kids in the programs across the country now, you can't stop. You got to go bigger. You got to go harder.
You've got that momentum going now. It's going to be very difficult to slow that down.
Yeah, or just like when they're saying after FISM, it's what you do after it that's the most important. It's the next thing you do. Yeah, you can always sit back and say that was great. That was a fun lockdown. I'm really excited about the direction it goes, because we now, like, for the magic community, we now see magic and science in the two largest school districts in the country. That's exciting. Like, we don't have to be necessarily with the not to knock on anybody, but we don't have to be in the jugglers and mime category all the time. We are officially being used as an academic resource in the two largest school districts in the country. That's amazing. And I really think it's just the tip of the iceberg.
Was going to ask you, what have you got coming up? What goals have you got? Now, I know you can't tell me the exciting thing, and that's fine. And I'm going to encourage people to keep checking your socials, because I'm sure the second you can announce it, you will announce it. But you personally, Jason, what goals have you got? Because I know you're very goal-centric. I know we talked off camera about having a goal, having a clear mental image, knowing where you want to be. And I know, as ambitious as you are, and however much success you've achieved at this point, you're just getting started.
Yeah, that's my favorite thing. Just getting started. I think it's really, really important as a performer or even as an individual to have a plan. Like, how is it going to do? What's your ultimate goal? And then what are your steps you're going to need to do to get to that goal? So that means every step you make forward is a step in the right direction. So like first the magic community, then the science community, now converged them together. So now we have impossible science. It was a very thought out plan. My goal for Impossible Science is to impact as many people as possible. I know that sounds very vague, but like I don't want to jinx it by setting my goal out there in the world, because but my heart is in the right place. My focus is in the right place, and I'm going to try to impact as many people as possible as I can. That's my goal, is impact as many people as possible. But I think the other one is I'd like to take magic beyond entertainment. I really think this is a paradigm shift. I really think, you know, there was a time when magic was on stage in the Vaudevillian acts. There was a time when magic and made it into the Las Vegas world. There's a close-up magic. There's social media magic. Who would have thought, you know, all the creative minds that are out there that I see on social media just blow me away. I don't even know what to watch anymore. I don't even know what I'm looking at sometimes. So I can't either editing or contrast or methods that are just familiar to everybody with how the camera works is just beyond me. Just brilliant minds out there. But I really do think science and magic is a new paradigm. And and as long as you're not doing it to trick or fool or make fun of somebody, magic can really benefit people. I get really nervous about the people that are making social media content that's fake magic or lying about science by using a magic technique or playing something in reverse. And even though it may not look like a magic trick to them because they think it's funny that people could believe it, as the illusion of knowledge gets more and more deceptive, that popular video of a coin all of a sudden spinning because you put batteries and forks around it, which is, I don't know if you've seen this.
I've seen those. Yeah, they're ridiculous. Yeah.
The problem is that could be more detrimental than entertaining. As people, I can't tell you how many times, even on my own team, we've had debates about whether or not the experiment we found online actually would work. People help me source different content, and we're like, well, we could just do an investigation on if this is possible, but you find a lot of it's just trickery. Now, tricky as a magician in entertainment, in that world, totally fair game, totally believe magicians should just use anything possible to get that experience. But trickery in the world of education and in the information age, that could be very dangerous. And I don't think many people say, you know, like a lot of people say, I go on the internet, I want entertainment. That's great. But it's not a clear defined line when you click from an entertainment site to a informational site. And so that blurred line could lead to a lot of confused individuals.
Yeah.
And don't forget, we're the last generation to actually see the birth of the internet. Like, the next generation is the one I'm worried about. The kids that remember, the kids that forgot we gave the internet its answers. But my goal is definitely to change the paradigm, to create a new paradigm for magic. I would really like to impact a lot of people in a very positive way. And by a lot, I mean a lot. a little bit crazy.
Wow. I'm actually blown away here, Jason. I really am, because, you know, what you've achieved, what you continue to achieve, seeing your passion come through the screen, you know, you could have very easily rested on your laurels. You could very easily have said, I'm this multi-award winning magician. TV shows want me. Wizard Wars want me. This company wants me. This company wants me. I can just do that for the rest of my life and be super successful. But you're kind of saying here, you know, I've got this calling. I've got this passion. I think I can make a difference. Let's make a difference. Let's make it happen. And yeah, it's honestly, it's so inspirational too.
Oh, it's super, super, super sweet. I mean, like we're playing a game without a rule book, right? You know, I think that's one of my favorite things to tell students, especially with kids. I always put this out there. Imagine walking up to a table full of people playing a board game. If anybody remembers what a board game is, and you came up there and you said, well, how do you play? And people are like, we don't know. We don't have a rule book. And they go, can you do this? And the person goes, we've learned you can't do that, but you can do this. And you can't do this, but you can do that. It reminds me of Richard Feynman when he talks about, like, you know, everybody thinks they know the rules. If you were just observing chess and make it all, and you feel that a piece is dead and you make a pawn all the way to the other end, and all of a sudden you can change it to something else. Everyone gets their mind blown in the science community that, like, here's a new rule. We don't know. We didn't know this happens after this new rule. But going back, sorry, I got on a tangent there. But if you go back to that original feeling of a kid walking up to a board game asking, how do you play? There's no difference in that scenario than the education space. How do we play in a game without a rule book? You have to ask questions. You have to challenge what we know and use what we've learned so far to ask a new question. And the magic community is the magic as an art form is extremely good at creating curiosity and questions. I haven't found anything better than the magic community, magic at creating curiosity. So here we are, a game without a rule book where the right question changes everything. You've got one community that just generates questions left and right. And all we want to do is just combine them together, and we could really change the way we learn and change the way we look at things, where the right question changes everything. So you get, when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. The flight was always possible. We just didn't know it existed. We didn't know we could do it until someone asked the right question. Light bulb, always possible till someone asks the right question. Everything's impossible until someone finds the right question. Mm-hmm. And finding that new question is only going to come from the people that inspire curiosity and wonder. And that's why I think the magic community in this case could really make a difference. And if I can help be a part of that, then I feel like I'm doing my job right. And I'm inspiring curiosity and wonder on a massive scale.
Well, one last question. And this has been one of my favorite interviews of all time. But one last question. Somebody who's in the magic community that's watching this, that absolutely resonates with everything that you've said in this interview, what can they do?
To either get a part of Impossible Science or just help.
Both.
Well, I can always use help in Impossible Science. I will not look a gift horse in the mouth on that one. We're constantly looking for effects that don't use sleight of hand. Everybody from Paul Harris to Arthur Benjamin to Max Maven to Jim Steinmeier, huge thank you to him. Him and I give him a call all the time asking for a favor, probably ran out of favors about 10 favors ago. We're constantly looking for effects that don't involve sleight of hand, something that would actually use a scientific principle. The low-hanging fruit's already gone. Now we're reaching for some really specialized ones. You don't even have to know how it works. Let us take care of that. We'll actually, I don't want to give them away because I don't want to throw them under the bus. I've had tons of designers come to me like, this is a really cool principle. I have no idea why it works, but it totally works. And we write the lesson plan behind it, why it actually works. But when it comes to what can a magician do outside of the Impossible Science, it's just realize that you're what you're inspiring in others, that curiosity and wonder, doesn't have to just stay with entertainment. Now, you could use this in real estate to history lessons. It doesn't have to do specifically with education. It could be banking. Your ability to get somebody to ask a question is exactly what you want if somebody wants to learn. And so I strongly recommend not using magic to fool, but to use magic to inspire thought. It makes it change quite a bit. You know, like I'm not in magic to trick anyone. I don't like making a fool of anybody. I'm just a guy who asked a lot of questions, and I have no superpowers whatsoever. like I tell every kid, I have no superpowers. Everything you're about to see just came from a person that asked a lot of questions. And if you ask the same questions, you could build the same thing I built, or you could have asked a totally different question and yours could totally work. It just might be better than mine because your question could be different than mine.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's how you see beyond the illusion of knowledge, is realizing your question might be different than everyone else's question. And that's how you make the next cure, the next technology, the next magic trick, the next advancement in your career, finding the question no one's asked yet.
So. That's great. That's fantastic. That's awesome. I'm blown away. I really am. I'm blown away. Genuine. It's very rare I'm speechless, but I'm blown away. And this has been an incredible interview. It really has. I've been so excited. I know your schedule is just insane. We've been trying to organize this for 2 months now. I thought I was busy. I ain't got nothing on you.
I remember once you sent me a message, and it was like 3:30 in the morning. I was like, I'll just respond to him. And I thought two things. One, he'll probably be like, I can't believe he responded so quickly. two, I thought it was really funny. I bet you he doesn't realize this is a viable time for me. Half of I work with people around the world. So like some of the people I work with, the problem with working with people around the world is everyone's up sometime everywhere.
That's it. Where can people go to find out more about Impossible Science? I'm going to drop links to socials and URLs and everything. Tell me what you got.
So if you're an educator, impossiblescience.com, super easy to go. You can go to gallery. Under each video has a link to the lesson plan tied to that.
Worldwide,
impossiblescience.com. You want to find out more about what I do? JasonLatimer.com, super easy. and Latimer spelled L-A timer. It's easy to. JasonLatimer.com. Now, that also goes for social medias. Both the websites have links to everything I do, as far as like Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok. I personally am loving TikTok. I'm having a blast on it because we don't get to do a deep dive into the science as much, but we can take something that inspires a lot of curiosity and fun and link it to a video. Like we did a video on a porch pirate table. I don't know if you've seen it. It went crazy, hyper viral. It was really funny. It was basically turning your packages invisible so that no one steals the packages off your doorstep. And it was using magic to solve that problem. That video went crazy viral, and then we showed a how to build it on YouTube because we had more time. So I like the speed of TikTok.
I do see on TikTok also a lot of that they do reference science experiments quite a lot. Like I saw that trend with the Mentos and the Coke, and you know, that sort of thing. So you know, you're always seeing those sort of videos on TikTok, and it is a great audience for who you're trying to reach because there's a lot of kids and teens and preteens on there.
It's great to test out, especially for up and coming people. TikTok's fairly new. I mean, it's been around for a while, but as far as like this momentum it's had, it's great to test out stuff and get immediate response. And if it's something goes really well, you can go make another video about it. We took that Mentos and Coke bottle thing and we 3D printed our own bottle caps or breakaway. Mm-hmm. And then we put Mentos in there with tape to prevent them from actually just dropping immediately into the Coke. I mean, some of them were in there. And then we made a chute with a blade at the bottom so that it slides down the chute, it hits it, breaks the cap and takes off like a mortar. It was really funny. One of my favorite ones I built for TikTok, which turned out to be a great idea, which was I built a laser blaster where you can actually see the beam shoot in the air. And it was using a flickering laser, but changing the shutter speed on your camera, then you get that whole stop action of the beam pulsing. It's really cool.
Wow.
And so, that one millions of people saw it. So I'm like, all right, well, maybe I should build a how-to on how to do that. So I like the speed of TikTok. But yeah, we do tons of experiments. As far as the other social medias, we're constantly posting about things that just sound impossible that became true, or things that are just great questions that are being asked around the world. And if anybody has any specific topic they want to talk about, we love hearing requests. By the way, that Porch Pirate table actually came from somebody saying, I saw you build an invisibility shield with a giant lenticular lens. Could you use that to make a package turn invisible so that no one steals your package? And I'm like, no, it won't work necessarily, but I do like the idea of turning a package invisible. So let's go do that. And so if you reach out to us on social media, I love the ideas and the requests people have. So please, if you want to learn more about what we do and love to stay in contact, I love hearing questions. And I love hearing from the magic community, by the way. I can't tell you how many people still reach out to ask to work on a magic trick or something like that. And if it's a really cool one, I'm happy to help out. Like, I love hearing the ideas.
Oh, that's awesome. And I'm going to wrap the interview up now because I know you're busy, but let me ask you one more thing. If a magic, let's say the biggest magic convention in the world, if they were like, you know what, we want Jason Latimer to come back and do one last show, nothing to do with science. I mean, obviously your show is very science-based, but it didn't come across that way. Would you go back and do that as a one-off thing?
Absolutely. Now, I just want to make clear, impossible science is not about teaching the science behind a magic trick. It's not about exposing a magic trick. I am still a magician through and through. No one has to worry about me exposing magic tricks.
Oh, I know that.
I just did a great presentation with Starkle. And you remember Dan Harlan's Starkle? It's a take a napkin, tear it once, and you get a star and you get a circle hole in the napkin. And right. I do the presentation, I don't say it's possible, and I don't say how to do it, but I do say this is impossible. And the reason I say that is because I refuse to lie to an audience, and I refuse to give away secrets. So even when it comes close, I'll never expose. The reason I say that, I'm still a magician at heart, and anything that promotes the magic community forward, or specifically helps me promote the awareness of the illusion of knowledge forward through magic, whether it's magic or science, I'm 100% on board. I am grateful for everything the magic community has given me, and I'm just doing my best to give back. So that's my mentality about it. I'm very lucky. Very lucky. Still got a lot of work to do. Just getting started.
So you know what? Like I said, I know how ambitious you are. I know what you've achieved. I know that you're, like you said, you're just getting started. And I know that this is just going to get bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger. And you're going to continue to push. And I don't think you're ever going to be happy. I don't think you're ever going to be
I
can rest. Switch on the Netflix. I don't think that's in your head. I think you're going to continue to go and go and go. And I think everybody will benefit from it. So, on behalf of the magic community, but also on behalf of everybody that you've ever reached out to with Impossible Science, Jason, thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. It's been an absolute pleasure. I really had a great time. And I'm just so thankful that you're interested in the goofiness that is Impossible Science.
Sure. And I want everyone who's watching this video to do whatever they can do to help. Go check out the socials, go check out the website, try, if you've got kids that are in school, make sure that, the teachers and the schools are aware of what you're doing, because that's a big thing that can help, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I know I keep adding on to stuff, but to be honest, there's a lot of experiments in here that I think every magician would be like, oh my God, that's actually possible. Like, you find out like, There's tons of people that say, is that a trick? Is that real? I'm like, yeah, everything you see on Impossible Science is real. There is no, there's a trick to get the conversation started, but the science experiment is real. Like we did one with a paper airplane that flies forever. It's not a joke. It literally would fly forever as long as you walk behind it. It's a walk-along glider. It talks about how lift works and how to build it and how to make it. And as long as you walk with this, it will keep flying. And, that means you'll walk for forever as long as you're walking forever. But like, but it's things that every adult would love to know just as much as a kid. So it's real magic. Like
That's so cool. I'm gonna the second this interview finishes, I'm going over to Impossible Science. I got my evening planned. I know exactly what I'm gonna
do
right now.
Sounds good.
Jason, right. One more time, thank you so much. I really appreciate you coming on the channel. Honestly,
thank you so much.
Do me a favor, leave a comment down below. Let Jason know what you think. Go and support him. Go check out Impossible Science. Tell everybody about it. Follow him on his socials, his website, do everything that you can. This man's changing the world through magic, and we can help him. And I will be back again tomorrow with another video. I'll see you guys then. But Jason, thanks so much.
Take care.
Thanks for listening to the Talk Magic Podcast.
Magic.
Be sure to like and subscribe to the Magic TV YouTube channel,
Magic TV,
which includes 14 unique videos every week. Whatever type of magic you're interested in, we've got you covered. Just search YouTube for Craig Petty's Magic TV, or click on the link in the description from this podcast below. Be sure to join us next Friday at 5 p.m. right here for another Talk Magic Podcast.